And the question one must ask is this: is it powerful in its simplicity, or is it merely clever? One contemporary female poet has said in print, "It's just cute. That's all it is. Nothing more." Take another example of sensuousness and clarity. This is not particularly visual, but it is important in its use of imagery. This is a poem from 1934 entitled "This Is Just to Say." It's a poem addressed to the poet's wife. It could refer to any domestic situation between two people. "This is just to say, I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox and which you were probably saving for breakfast. Forgive me. They were delicious, so sweet, and so cold." Does the poem have sufficient strength to carry the weight of its emotional or psychological impulses? Again, we have no metaphor, we have no figurative language here, just sensuous language and effect. Like his contemporary, Ernest Hemingway, Williams is very sparing in his use of adjectives. This fact tends to make them, when we come upon them, more significant. Delicious, sweet, cold. I doubt they would work as well for other fruits as they do for plums. That is why he has chosen them. And one last, slightly longer but still short poem by Williams called simply Poem, something with a bit of action in it. "As the cat climbed over the top of the jam closet, first the right forefoot, carefully, then the hind, stepped down into the pit of the empty flower pot." Here's a poetic vignette whose major impact is felt by the relation of language to spacing, as we saw in the Ammons poem in the first lecture. You have to hear the short pauses between the lines and the slightly longer pauses between the stanzas in order to register the full aural, that is, on the ear, the aural effect of the poem's effort to depict feline activity. The poem represents a poet's attempt to render something seen, almost like a piece of cinematic action rather than a painting or a still life. The wheelbarrow painting was something like a painting. Two colors, red and white, conditioned the entire thing. Let's go back in time to consider another use of imagery. In this case, the idea of a list as a poetic form. And I want to talk about Robert Herrick's prefatory poem, The Argument of His Book. You're familiar already with Herrick's work, so here's the poem that stands as the introduction to his collected poems, all of which were published in 1648. And I call your attention here to the way in which a simple statement of purpose, a catalog or a list, can have poetic effect. Here's Herrick's argument. "I sing of brooks, of blossoms, birds, and bowers, of April, May, of June, and July flowers. I sing of maypoles, hock carts, wassails, wakes, of bridegrooms, brides, and of their bridal cakes. I write of youth, of love, and have access by these to sing of cleanly wantonness. I sing of dews, of rains, and piece by piece of balm, of oil, of spice, and ambergris. I sing of times transshifting, and I write how roses first came red and lilies white. I write of groves, of twilights, and I sing the court of Mab and of the fairy king. I write of hell. I sing, and ever shall, of heaven, and hope to have it after all." The poet's claims for his subject matter move from the things of this world to the things of the next. Right from the start, we can hear, as well as envision, his attempts to make order through his delicate alliteration at the beginning, brooks, blossoms, birds, bowers. And this order in sound is extended by the temporal order of the months in line 2, April, May, June, and July. In addition to the moving outwards, to the human realm of youth and love, and that wonderful phrase in the poem's middle, cleanly wantonness, we have a moving upwards towards weather, towards exotic things, and to the very processes of nature. The poem ends appropriately with hope for heavenly favor. Herrick was an Anglican clergyman as well as a poet himself. And we should attend as well, I think, to the alternation between I sing and I write. The effect stations us in our understanding of the poet's progress, but also reminds us of the convention that the earliest poets, like Homer, were bards who did not write, but who delivered their work orally.